Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Open Air, KALW's regular program about many things culturally considered in our Bay Area. I'm Kevin Vance, sitting in for David LaTulip, who's on holiday for the next few weeks. There's nothing like being on vacation in Northern California. And there are so many of us who live here, we forget what a great place for music, theater, the arts, and being outdoors our home can be. We're going to show some appreciation for that. I'm really looking forward to talking to a couple of people about the Bay Area Playwrights Festival happening, starting this weekend, going on all this week. We'll also talk about a children's story made into a musical, that's Roald Dahl's Matilda, and Music at Menlo will return with a big tribute to the music of Franz Schubert. Stay with us. I'd like to welcome to the KALW microphones Cassie Silva, who plays the part of Miss Wormwood in the musical production of Matilda, the musical based on the story of Roald Dahl. Cassie, welcome to KALW.
Hello, thank you so much for having me. Good to be here.
So we all know who Roald Dahl is. He wrote James and the Giant Peach, and I remember seeing Matilda on the bookshelves, but what's the story of Matilda?
Ah, oh, it's magical. So Matilda is about a magical little girl. She's 5 years old, and she has extraordinary powers that she finds within the course of the book or the musical, depending on what you're seeing. And she has some interesting circumstances at home as well as at school, and just sort of an interesting life. And she finds her way into changing her destiny, which I think is great. And we get to sort of see this really amazing little girl find her way into that.
What part do you play? What does Miss Wormwood do in this story?
So Mrs. Wormwood is Matilda's mother. She is an extremely passionate yet crass and enthusiastically loud woman with a very strong point of view.
Is she encouraging to Matilda?
She's encouraging to her own points of view, but no. No, to be quite frank, she's not very encouraging to Matilda, unless it's very encouraging to be loud.
What did you read the book when you were a kid?
Oh, totally. It actually was one of my favorite books. As I was saying before we went on air, I really love the darkness of the book.
Oh, there's darkness in it. Tell me about the darkness.
Yeah, there just is a lot of dark humor and a lot of themes that I think are wonderfully portrayed about not being alone and abuse and respect and coming into your own. And I just love that. Yeah, I really loved it as a kid. It really spoke to me. And I'm a huge Roald Dahl fan as it is. I love Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and The Witches and but Matilda, of course, and I'm biased, but it was my favorite as a child.
Did you ever think you were ever going to be in a play or be on stage playing a part in that story?
Oh, gosh, no. No, I never thought that at all. I actually came to live theater later in life, my career. I mean, I'm young, but yeah, I had done TV and film growing up, and theater was just sort of a natural progression that I never really foresaw. I always loved theater. I love storytelling. I've always been obsessed with imagination and pretend. And so this has been a really unique and special experience.
How far back did you start acting?
I believe professionally I started when I was around 5 years old.
Okay.
I grew up in Los Angeles, and Yeah, my sister cast me as Simba in our front lawn production of I Just Can't Wait to Be King. And she put a tutu on my head and the rest is history, so to speak. Once that boom blaster started, I was hooked. And I've been doing it ever since then.
So you did it voluntarily. You didn't get recruited by the parents. Here, you're going to earn your college tuition here. You're going to go out there and act and be the next Gerber baby or anything like that.
Oh gosh, no. Gosh, I sort of wish that's how it was. No, my parents were wonderful and super supportive. Neither of them are in the business or had any insight or clue, and they just were so wonderful in their curiosity and exploration as to how to support me and champion me through that. No, I would drag them to auditions.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I understand that you, as a kid, you worked on the Jell-O commercials alongside Bill Cosby. Mm. You must have a story or something in that.
Oh, man. Those were so super fun. We actually did, I did a handful of them. One of my greatest memories is just dancing on school desks. We did this like really fun sequence in a schoolroom.
I think I remember that commercial.
Yeah. And like, we were like, you know, playing drums and stuff like that, but with spoons on desks and bowls and stuff with Jell-O pudding. And I was always the pistachio pudding girl. Mm. And at the time I was, you know, it's green and I wasn't really a fan of that. It since has become my favorite, but I remember just sort of feeling like I really wanted to be the chocolate pudding girl.
Has your opinion of Bill Cosby changed in light of the news that's been out about him?
I don't know.
This is one of the hard-hitting journalistic questions.
Yeah.
where we dump
the magic of Matilda and Bill Cosby.
Right.
Gosh, I still love Jell-O. I don't know where I stand on that to have an actual voiced opinion on it at this moment. But I did have such wonderful memories.
He was professional. He didn't do anything inappropriate with...
No, not when I was working with him.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm so no scandal from any of that. But you worked as Miss Wormwood in the Broadway production as well as the San Francisco production, right?
Yeah, I had the wonderful opportunity of understudying Mrs. Wormwood. Mm. And yeah, that was awesome.
Was it really awesome? And that's how you got the part. You were so good, you got the part, right?
Let's believe it that way. I was part of the Broadway company for 8 months, and like I just said, I understudied Mrs. Wormwood, and they sort of approached me and said, you know, would you be interested in launching the tour? And at the time I sort of thought, my gosh, I'm still trying to remember my lines. Mm. She's just such a fun and vivacious and vibrant character, and the story is wonderful. And obviously I'm a fan of the book, and I think the creatives, along with, you know, so we have Matthew Warchus, who directed, and Peter Darling, who choreographed, Tim Minchin wrote the music, and I just think that they're all geniuses. So to be able to sort of like rub elbows with that, I was like, yeah, absolutely. I would be honored.
Now, enough about Mrs. Wormwood, about the young Matilda. Is that one actor playing that one part, or is it... How do they do that? Now, is she 5 years old? Is she really 5 years old?
She plays five. We actually are extremely lucky. We get to play with three Matildas on tour.
How do you do that?
How do you do three? They do it for you. It's such a magical experience. So we have three Matildas, mm-hmm. Mabel Tyler, Gabby Gutierrez, and Mia Sinclair Jeunesse, and they're all 10 years old. They're all wonderfully unique. I call them the unicorns because they're so like mystical and magical. I don't know how to explain their work ethic or their presence or their poise. It's really special. Each of them brings something so unique and heartfelt to the character that yelling at them every night is...
does it break your heart?
Yeah. It does break my heart. Sometimes I look in their eyes and I just think, oh my gosh, you're looking into my soul. Don't do that. I'm just playing.
This is just a part I'm playing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But they love it and they play right along with you and they're so there. And, yeah, I always think to myself, I'm just going to go gain some perspective. The other night, one of them came off stage and she said, "Oh my gosh, that just felt so special. And I really felt like I was moving that chalk with my eyes." And I just thought to myself, "Oh my gosh, I am. What a unique experience that I, you know, as actors, I feel like sometimes we sort of get in our heads about things. So it's really great to actually be working with. And we have children in addition to the three Matildas that we work with that play our children in the show. And they're all under the age of 13, I believe, maybe our oldest. And we have adults that are also able to play children, but there's just something really special about being able to be alongside children because they just have a perspective on life as well as the work that it's second to none because as children, we don't have sort of the mask of adulthood and
I would say a mask definitely. There's definitely a wall that comes up growing up. You know, you can't be spontaneous, you can't be dramatic.
Yeah.
And then we have to learn it all over again, learning to be actors. Like I have to be a show off again.
Yeah. Yeah, and sometimes I always say they keep me in check 'cause sometimes I look over to them and I think, "Oh, I'm overacting." 'Cause they're just so natural, you know what I mean? That I always say, like, my joke on it is kind of like the monkey bar is set higher than any other, because the bar that they set is just, it's just real, it's palpable, it's tangible, and that's what I strive for, is to get on their level.
We're talking with Cassie Silva. She plays the part of Miss Wormwood in the production of the San Francisco premiere of Matilda, the musical, based on the children's novel by Roald Dahl. It's taking place, it just opened, and it's taking place at the Orpheum Theater now through the 15th of August. Showtimes are Tuesdays through Saturdays in the evening. Wednesday, Saturday, Sundays have matinees, and there are also additional performances on various nights. Online information, you may go to shnsf.com. A telephone number you may dial is 888-746-1799. As I said, Cassie Silva, who plays the part of Matilda's mother, Miss Wormwood. Is that scandalous for Miss Wormwood to be a mother? I'm imagining early 20th century Britain or something like that. Is that when it takes place?
It does take place in its own time and world. However, the time that it was written, it is based in the late 70s, we sort of figured out.
Oh, okay. So it is a lot more modern then. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. How dare I assume that a children's book taking place in Britain takes place 100 years ago? How do you manage the 6-day work week schedule? I mean, you're working like every day except maybe one day.
Yeah, we have Mondays off. We do 8 shows a week. Well, first of all, we're excited. We just launched in Los Angeles, and we're here in San Francisco, which is no stranger to me. I love San Francisco. I'm so excited to be here. So we go off of excitement and adrenaline a lot of the time. And personally, I go off of gratitude. I'm just really excited and happy to be here and be playing an awesome role with children. I love children. And to be telling this story. And so I always feel like, in order to be able to tell the story, you know how you have to take care of yourself and be healthy. And these opportunities hopefully will come many times in my lifetime. But for now, this is the one that's at hand. So I want to be good for it. You know what I'm saying?
I do. I do indeed. Children and magic goes on. What else do we see on stage?
Oh, man. You see all kinds of things. We have lots of illusions, magic tricks. We're throwing a little girl by her hair. We have magic chocolate cake. We've got bright green hair. We've got a magical chalkboard. We've got all kinds of things going on. That alone would get me in the theater. Come on over.
So this isn't going to be too scary, too dark a tale for little kids. I mean, is there an age limit? Can I bring a 5-year-old?
Oh, no. My nephew's 7, and he just ate it up like chocolate. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, he loved it. And one thing that I really respect and love about Matilda the musical is that it actually genuinely is for all ages. Mm. Like, I know kids that have come that are maybe 4 years old that come, and they take away something really, really wonderful. And then I know people that are grandparents, and they come away and they're like, whoa, that blew my mind. I'm like, I know, mine too.
Fantastic. What else are you working on? I mean, when this is all over, what else will we be seeing you in?
Oh, hopefully something really awesome. Right now I'm focusing on this, because we just launched it. So I've just been sort of, putting all of my time and energy into that. However, I am a writer. I love writing and acting. It's what I've been doing, what I love to do. Hopefully there'll be another story by the time that will help me transition out of this that I can tell.
Do you have one particular passion over another? Stage, film, television, musical theater, writing?
Wow, all of those are just like green lights in my head.
that's like, what's your favorite child? I like them all.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. And I come from a big family, so I know that question well. I hate to be cliche about it, but it really is whatever I'm working on at the time. And to sort of balance that out, a lot of the time, if I'm working really heavily on theater, like now, I'm also watching a lot of film and TV, just sort of balancing it out, and reading a ton. And, you know, I love podcasts and radio and, and stuff like that. Yeah, I love your show as well.
Oh, gee, thank you.
Yeah.
What podcasts are you listening to?
Oh,
you're listening on your portable device, right?
Yes.
Yes, that's the way to listen to them now.
I'm totally blanking, and what a bummer, because I actually do listen to so many podcasts.
I have a friend of mine who would just scroll down and just say,
yeah,
I'll watch this one. I'm going, oh, okay.
Yeah. It's not necessarily on podcasts, but one that's popping up. My gosh, I really am blanking. That's terrible.
There are a lot of good ones out there.
I love the roundtables. I love Hollywood Reporters roundtables.
No kidding.
Oh, my gosh. I just love them.
Well, you're listening to your fellow actors working. They're describing, you know, oh, okay, you're talking
yeah,
about the
and I love actors on actors, like when the actors interview the actors.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I just love it.
Yeah,
I've listened to a couple that are really great. Yeah, nuts. If I think of one, it'll pop into my head, and I'll let you know. Shoot.
You can email it to me, and I'll tell the world afterwards.
Oh, man. What was it? Serial.
Oh, Serial. Yes, yes.
That's an older one.
That's the one. Yeah, that's the one that grew out of This American Life. Yeah,
it was so good. This American Life, I love.
Yeah.
Nuts.
That's
shoot.
Okay. Her name is Cassie Silva. She plays the part of Miss Wormwood, the mother of Matilda, in Matilda the Musical, taking place at the Orpheum Theater now through August 15th, the Orpheum Theater in downtown San Francisco. Their website is shnsf.com. Their telephone number is 888-746-1799. You have this all memorized. You don't have to do rehearsals anymore. You just go on stage. Or are you doing more rehearsals?
Oh, no, we're always in rehearsal. There's always something to build upon. We actually have rehearsal today.
Oh, gosh. I shouldn't keep you much longer then.
thanks for having me.
What do you guys, just the whole, you're going to do a run through of the whole show, or are there particular things that you're working on?
I mean, it really depends. It depends on the day, especially with coming into a new theater. Sometimes there's more to work on technically, because our set does, eating my words.
It's okay.
Our set is transported, and so sometimes there's, you know, things that have to be worked on technically. There also are tons of illusions and props and things like that. So, yeah, that's all kinds of, and we have a lot of children, so let's just keep it fresh and safe.
Such a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, you as well.
Have fun, and I'm sure you're tired of people saying break a leg, but I'm so glad that you're working on this project. This sounds like a lot of fun. It's Matilda the Musical. It's happening at the Orpheum Theater here in San Francisco. A musical based on the story of the children's book by Roald Dahl. Happening now through August 15th, Orpheum Theater, Tuesdays through Saturdays at 8 p.m. There are also matinees. A website to go to is shnsf.com. And we're about to play a song here from the soundtrack, from the performance called When I Grow Up. What's going on in this song?
So this is the, we have an interesting act two. So I want to say that this is the opener without spoiling anything, but this is one of the openers to act two. And it sort of is our happiest number, sort of about growing up and being a child and also an adult. And yeah, it takes place in a playground, and then it leads us into the rest of act two.
Cassie, a treat to meet you.
You as well. Thanks.
When I grow up, I will be tall enough to reach the branches that I need to reach to climb the trees you get to climb when you're grown up. And when I grow up, I will be smart enough to answer all the questions that you need to know the answers to before you're grown up. And when I grow up, I will eat sweets every day on the way to work, and I will go to bed late every night.
Don't grow up. Growing up is overrated. A song from Matilda, the musical. San Francisco premiere of that now in progress, going on through to August the 15th at the Orpheum Theater. And a website for information, shnsf.com. and as I said, the Orpheum Theater in downtown San Francisco. It is Open Air, KLW's weekly magazine of things culturally considered around the Bay Area. Speaking of theater, I'm very excited to hear about the 2015 Bay Area Playwrights Festival. It's going on from the 17th through the 26th. That's Friday all week, finishing up on Sunday the following weekend. It's taking place, is it taking place at a number of places, or is it taking just place at the Tide Theater?
It moves at a rate relative.
Just making sure I have everything right. So it's just at the Tides Theater.
Yes, just at the Tides. A couple of events are taking place at Scriptopia, which is a theater that's directly across the hall. So it's all at that same location at 533 Sutter Street.
Okay. We're talking with producer Karen Altree, PM, as well as playwright Carolee Corthran about the 38th Annual Bay Area Playwrights Festival. I think of a festival and I think, well, not just performances, but will there also be workshops for playwrights to get together and say, how do you do this? How do you write a play?
Sure. Well, and rather than, you know, workshops on instructing other playwrights on how to write a play, there are a variety of events that take place that are linked to some of the issues that are addressed in some of the plays. For example, we have an event coming up this Saturday, which is in collaboration with an organization called Hip Hop for Change. Mm. And they're going to be holding a community conversation focusing on the Black Lives Matter movement and issues around race, class, and gender privilege and hip hop, because all of those issues come up in a couple of the plays that we're working on and that will be performed that day, one of which is Kara's play.
Kara, tell me about your play. I want to know about it.
Sure. My play is called Welcome to Fear City. And it takes place in 1977 in the South Bronx in New York, kind of the dawn of hip-hop. And the play takes place over the course of a night where there is a huge party happening, and at the same time, a young guy has been challenged to possibly commit a pretty dangerous crime for money. And this is during a time of serious crime, poverty, and unemployment in the city of New York. So it's a pretty tough decision, and he has to figure out what he's going to do. But all in the background of that is this kind of pulsing music and of hip-hop. We actually see a DJ go from being a DJ to an MC in the course of the play in the background.
Okay, so it's not just the art of writing plays or performing plays, but it's also the issues that come up.
Absolutely.
What other issues are coming up in the various productions that we're going to see?
You know, one of the things that I love about the plays that were selected for this festival is that all in their own way, they're all in some way about transformation. You know, so we have a play by Lauren Gunderson called The Revolutionists that takes a look at four women that actually lived during the French Revolution and were themselves revolutionists. We have a play by Geeta Reddy called On a Wonderverse, which actually looks at a woman who is a scientist who creates her own universe within the laboratory and then watches as universes do it take on a life of its own and grow and expand and change and so on. We have a play by Christine Evans called Galilee, which focuses on issues around environmentalism. It takes place at the Great Barrier Reef in Australia and looks at the tension that exists between preserving our ecology, but also preserving the livelihoods of people who live in coastal towns. We have a play by Brendan Pelsu called Read to Me, which is about a young man who is very, very young, a young boy who is actually terminally ill and is in the hospital and sort of centers around what his world is, the limitations of his world, and how he explores and discovers the world around him and his relationships. We have a play called Hooded, or Being Black for Dummies, by Terrence Chisholm. And he is really looking at race and class and issues around how we are raised and how that affects our sense of our identity. And then finally, we have a play by Sam Lahn called Hashtag Julies. And that is actually a piece around fictitious realities. And I think that we all can understand a little bit now as we're as we're moving forward with technology, how it's possible to create an online persona and then have that get away from you and for you to lose control of it. So that's part of what happens in that piece. So, you know, in each of these, there's a real strong sense of some transformation that is being undergone by the characters in these plays.
This sounds really exciting. I always find when I go to a play, whether it's a brand new playwright nobody's ever heard of or something really somebody really famous, that I find that not only has somebody told me a story, but some change has actually happened. Is that what playwrights really mean to do, or is that what playwrights mean to do?
How do you do it?
How do you do it?
I can mainly speak for myself, but from my understanding of what playwrights are trying to do, I think that we hope for that. I think that that's the goal when we start writing, is that we hope that people feel some kind of change or that something has shifted inside of them when they leave. That in even if it's in a minuscule way, that they feel like a different person to some degree leaving the theater. And I think a lot of what happens when we're developing plays, because that's sort of a big part of our culture now is play development, we're trying to get to that place. And when people are asking questions or there are things that they aren't satisfied with or they don't quite understand, I think really it's all about, I didn't quite shift the way I wanted to shift. How can we get there? I want to get there. And I don't think that's true for everyone. I think other people have other reasons why they write plays. But at least in my experience, that's what I want to do as a writer. And when I go to see plays, that's what I want to feel. Mm. Like when I leave, I want to feel like something inside of me has shifted. I have changed. I'm thinking about something in a new way. And the best plays always do that to me.
I always want to ask, when did you start writing? When did you know that you were going to be writing plays as opposed to, say, novels or poetry or anything else?
Well, she actually writes both. You can plug your novel.
Actually, I just sold a novel to Simon & Schuster.
Excellent. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Simon & Schuster, that's good.
Yeah, they're pretty good. Thank you. I just really love writing. I used to be an actor, and I kind of burnt out on that. The lifestyle sort of drove me a little bit insane. And I also got tired of being called in to audition for pieces that I thought were kind of terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what I started doing was like, well, what if I wrote for myself? And I would write pieces and think, God, I want to play all of the parts in that. And then after a while, I thought, you know, no, I don't. I just want to write and hear other people play it. And then I was like, oh, I guess that means I'm a playwright. So it was kind of organic the way I fell into it.
When will your play be performed?
It's going to be at 8 p.m. this Saturday. And the second reading will be next Saturday, I believe, at 4 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Is it a reading or is it a performance?
It's both. It's a reading, but there will be like minimal staging and then there'll be some lights involved and I think a little bit of sound.
Okay. Yeah, we refer to them as staged readings. So they're being rehearsed. So we have, a terrific stable of actors that are here, each working individually on the different plays. So it's not as though, you know, there's one set of actors that are doing all the different plays. So we have about 40 different actors that are tackling these seven different plays, along with the playwright. And there's a director that's assigned to each production and a dramaturg who's working with the playwright to help them shape their piece. So there are about 70 artists in all that are working on these seven plays to get them mounted. And in these stage readings, they will be presented in a way that really allows for the playwright's words to come to life and to be, you know, evocative enough of what is intended by the playwright that with, you know, some good hard listening and a little imagination, you can get a sense of what these plays are going to be like once they're fully produced.
We're talking with producer Karen Altree, PM, as well as playwright Carolee Cothran. They are participating, one of 70-plus people participating in the 2015 Bay Area Playwrights Festival. It starts this Friday, tomorrow, July 17th, and runs to the 26th of July, which is the following Sunday. Most of it is taking place at the Tides Theater. That's 533 Sutter Street on the second floor at Powell Street here in San Francisco. Performances run over two weekends, the 17th through the 19th, as well as the 24th through the 26th. A website for more information is Playwrights, that's play with a W-R-I-G-H-T-S foundation.org. This is the 38th edition?
It is.
Gosh, so it's been going on for 38 years consecutively.
38 years consecutively,
And were you in, are people who were involved in the original one still involved in the one this year? Or?
Not so much in the original one, but there have been, a stable of artists who have been on board for a very long time. Amy Mueller is the artistic director at Playwrights Foundation, and she has been the artistic director for 15 years now. We do actually have some other people who are working on the festival in other capacities as dramaturgs who are previous artistic directors of the program. And so, there are a lot of people that are working with and for this organization who feel very strongly about the future of American theater and feel that it's important that we make sure that there's a wide diversity of voices that are being heard and that that those artists, those playwrights' voices and works are being developed in such a way that they get as much development as possible and can move on potentially to be produced in full productions elsewhere around the country. We want to be able to give them as much of a springboard as possible because these fantastic voices that you'll get a chance to hear if you come to the festival over the next couple weekends really are the voices that you want to be hearing in contemporary theater and are the future of our industry.
Oh, this sounds exciting. Are there events going on during the week?
There are a couple events going on during the week, mostly toward the end. We're actually working in collaboration with Theater Bay Area, and we are hosting their Atlas Playwright Showcase. So they have a training program for playwrights, and those playwrights have just gone through a year's training with them, and they're going to be reading some excerpts of their pieces next Thursday night at 7. And then on Friday of next week in the afternoon, we have an event for the industry. There's a woman from an organization called Scriptopia. And this is our effort to try to move into the 21st century. We should be here by now, 15 years into it. Mm-hmm. But we're looking to try to take the industry paperless. As you can imagine, if we've got 7 different plays and 70 different artists and lots of rewrites that are happening over the course of the 3 weeks that we're working on this, we kill a lot of trees. And so their organization has come up with a way to be able to load scripts onto computers and tablets and for playwrights to be able to make changes to their script, which automatically populates everybody else's script. And so right away, the actors, directors, dramaturgs all have at their fingertips all of the changes that have been made rather than having to print them and copy them and insert them and so on. And so she's going to be doing a demonstration of that product next Friday.
Next Friday. And will that be at the Tides? Or
That'll be at the Tides, yes, at 3 p.m.
Okay. Bay Area Playwrights Festival, it's going on this weekend and next weekend and the weekend between the 17th through the 26th. Most of it taking place at the Tides Theater, 533 Sutter Street on the second floor at Powell Street in San Francisco. And a website for more information is Playwrights Foundation. That's Play, WRIGHTS, Foundation.org. We're talking with Karen Pim and Carolee Corthran about the events. So it's the 38th edition. Obviously, you're going to be around for the 40th. Do we know what's coming up on the 39th and the 40th?
You know, we don't know yet. Actually, our window for submissions for plays opens on the 17th. So starting tomorrow, people can begin submitting their plays. And the process is that that playwrights from all over the country can submit their plays. This year, we had over 500 submissions. And then from those 500, we chose 7. Of the very best plays to be able to present at this festival. And so we have no way of knowing what will be in next year's festival until we get a chance to read those 500 and some odd plays and see what rises to the top.
What are you looking for when you're reading? How do you make the selection process?
It's a complex process of trying to determine not only what is really well written, but we're looking at a combination of content and form and innovation and issues. And so one of the things that's so exciting about this particular festival and these plays that you'll see when you come is that it's not just about what the plays are about. That's certainly part of it, and they all have really important stories to tell. But in addition, a lot of them are really playing with form, so that it's not just necessarily an A to B narrative form, but sometimes there's some magical realism, and sometimes things are taken out of time, and sometimes things go back in time, and so it's really a great way to look at the dramatic form in a variety of different ways.
Well, this sounds really exciting. A dramaturg is somebody who corrects the script or editorializes the script. What is the dramaturg?
Well,
do?
I wouldn't really say it's someone who corrects the script. Kara, do you want to talk a little bit about your relationship working with dramaturgs? How you work in collaboration?
Yeah, I think it's one of those interesting job titles. It's a little mysterious. But, dramaturgs are really supporters of the script and sometimes cheerleaders of the script. But I feel like what their job kind of is to really understand what the heart of the script is or what the playwright wants to do and to do their best to try to get them there. And then they also... they can have differing opinions. If they say, you know, I actually think that what you want to do might go better if you go this way. And then there can be little discussions and back and forth. Ultimately, it's always the playwright's decision. But the dramaturg is there trying to, like, really help steer the conversation and be, like, a really cool support system. And then later when there's production, you know, dramaturgs also can be helpful, a helpful eye for the director as well. Like, hey, did you notice that it used to be daylight a second ago, now it's nighttime? Like, mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's a very, you know, obvious thing. But yeah, so they're pretty much sort of the eyes and the ears keeping they want the best for the play.
Well, I'm excited to hear about all these plays, and I want to learn something, and that's part of what I, you know, not just be entertained, but I want to be moved. And it sounds like a lot of the plays that are going to be performed during this festival are going to do just that.
Absolutely. You know, these are some fantastic voices. Kara's voice, along with the six other playwrights, you know, these are the people that we want to hear from. They have really important stories to tell, really differing perspectives on our country and our world. And I think anyone who comes to get a chance to hear some combination of these stories is going to hear a wide variety of the people that are out there and the lives that they're living or have lived in the cases of things that are set in 77 or in the 1700s, depending upon which play you come to see. And it's, you know, it's an exciting time. So, you know, if you come to the festival, let's say on a Saturday or a Sunday, we have three readings a day on those days. So you can decide you want to, you know, come first thing in the morning. In fact, coming up next Saturday, we have an event that is for playwrights on how to get your play produced. You know, So you've written it and you've had a reading of it. And then now how does that get translated into a production that's going to take place in a theater? So we'll have that followed by a play at noon and then another one at 4 and then another one at 8. And so you can spend, you know, a day at the festival and see three very, very different works of theater.
Karen Ann PM, thank you so much for all the work that you're doing. Kara Lee Corthoran, thank you. I'm looking forward to this play that especially that you've written
that'll be
performed. And all these plays, I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of people's minds to be blown and to be entertained and come away with a great gift. The Playwrights Festival is happening starting tomorrow, the 2015 Bay Area Playwrights Festival, July 17th through the 26th. That's a Friday through Sunday, all through the two weekends and a little bit of the week in between. Most of it taking place at the Tides Theater here in San Francisco. Again, the address is 533 Sutter Street on the second floor at Powell Street here in San Francisco. Performances running the 17th through the 19th as well as the 24th through the 26th. The website for all the information, pick and choose, or just find out where everything is, and the address, the URL is playwrights, WRIGHTS foundation.org. Thank you so much.
Thank you so
much
for having us.
selection from the piano trio in E-flat major, music of Ludwig von Beethoven. Music of Schubert will also be featured quite a bit for the Music at Menlo. We took this from a collection of recordings and performances at Music at Menlo, and I'm very pleased to welcome back to the KLW microphones David Finkel, who is one of the founding directors, artistic directors of Music at Menlo. David, welcome back.
Thanks. So nice to be here again.
So Music at Menlo, for those who are not in the know, tell us about Music at Menlo.
Music at Menlo is a chamber music festival. It is so called that because we are headquartered at the Menlo School in Atherton, California. This is our 13th season coming up, and we are devoting it to the music and life of Franz Schubert.
Schubert. Tell us about Franz Schubert, those of us who know classical music, but for the one or two people who don't know, what a thumbnail sketch of who Franz Schubert was and why he was so special.
If you can relate musically to what we call the Romantic Age, the age that had such great composers in it as Brahms and Schumann and Dvorak and Tchaikovsky, Schubert was right at the very birth of the Romantic Age. He was living at the same time that Beethoven did. He died 1 year after Beethoven, but it was really Schubert who brought music full circle into what could be called a romantic sensibility. He was the greatest, up till that time, I believe he was the greatest melodist who ever lived. He was the guy that could turn a melody that you could just not get out of your head. And this was historic, and he also brought the genre of the lead or the solo song with piano to new heights and transformed that forever.
Will you be having leader during these performances?
We are having songs to an historic extent for us. There are songs on every single concert. Mm. And they all relate either to instrumental works that Schubert composed. Sometimes he took the themes from his songs and put them into instrumental pieces. Or they relate specifically to certain periods of his life.
Mm-hmm. So it's mostly a chamber music festival, and that's piano to violins, viola, cello.
We've got more than that. I mean, we've had in the past, not this season, we've had all percussion concerts. Chamber music is basically music that is to be performed by smaller ensembles without a conductor. But we have coming this year, we have clarinetists and horn players, as well as pianists, violinists, violists, and cellists.
So the 13th annual?
This is our 13th season, and we're very proud of that.
Did you start it all 13 years ago?
My wife, the pianist Wu Han, and I founded this festival right where it is now, 13 summers ago.
Mm. Obviously, Menlo Park was very receptive to it. Why did you pick Menlo Park as the home?
Well, we've always loved the Bay Area. We have long-time ties down on the peninsula through Stanford University, through the Lively Arts series there where I first started to play in the 80s. And when we were looking around America for a great place to start a summer festival, it dawned on us that nothing like it was happening here in the Bay Area, or specifically on the peninsula, during this time of the summer. It seemed like the perfect, most fertile ground to plant our seeds, and plant them we did, and they came up with a magnificent crop in the very first season.
Mm. You watched the festival grow up. Has it become what you wanted to be as it grows up?
It has grown up. It has grown up, but not necessarily out. We still have basically the same length. I think it's a 3-week festival. During that time, there are more events. It's grown richer, deeper, more challenging, more complex within its own structure. But basically, it has a kind of predetermined length. It's a very intense festival. There are things happening all the time. Within it, the Institute for Young Musicians has grown. We now have 40 young musicians coming there to study and to give concerts and to take lessons and master classes during the festival. That has grown considerably. And, of course, our reach in terms of our audience in person and digitally as well is growing. But the festival itself is still a kind of a 3-week jewel in our year that so many people look forward to.
I imagine it's a lot of work. I mean, you're a musician, but you're also putting on this festival. Does it seem like more work putting on the festival and the fun is taken out of the music or not at all?
I know it seems unbelievable to people who don't do these kind of things, but it really does take more than a year to plan one of these festivals. It's a huge undertaking. It only takes 3 weeks to start it and finish it. But the complexity of it, the amount of thought, research, the choice of musicians, artists, repertoire, how you put the programs together, it's something that we labor over intensively for many, many, many months. So it's at one time exhausting and exhilarating, but I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world.
So great joy, much more rewarding than oh my God, we got to do another one of these.
It always turns out to be more than the sum of its parts and to exceed my own expectations by miles.
How do you select the musicians who perform? I mean, I imagine you're running it, you're also performing in it, you and Wuhan. How do you select the other musicians?
Since we began Menlo in 2003, we also took on the artistic directorship of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. And through those two organizations, we have expanded what I would call our family, our personal family of collaborators, of musical colleagues. It's quite large now. We have them coming to us in New York and also in California from literally all over the world. They're flying in this week to San Francisco from all parts of the world to participate in this festival. That said, we do select the music first. We come at this festival with a certain kind of idea. Every festival that we do here tells a certain story. This is the story of Schubert. We choose the repertoire very carefully, and then from our large family of musicians, we select those whom we think would enjoy playing the music most, who would combine the best one with the other. And in that way, the festival grows to fruition.
David Finkel is our guest here in the segment of Open Air. We're talking about music at Menlo, which is taking place starting tomorrow, this Friday, going on till the 8th of August. 50 events on 3 stages in Atherton and in Menlo Park. A website for information is Music at Menlo, all spelled out. MUSICATMENLO.org. A telephone number for information you can call is 650-331-0202. How are we calling this? This is called a Schubertiad. Am I saying that right?
Yes, the Schubertiad is an all Schubert concert, and the Schubertiad itself dates from the time of Schubert. He was not a very publicly performed composer during his lifetime. Most of his audiences were in private residences, and these gatherings became known as Schubertiads. It was exclusively the music of Schubert, but those evenings were like grand parties, and they usually included Schubert sitting at the piano, playing his own compositions, and also accompanying various singers in his hundreds of songs.
Somebody was describing Schubert to me as he was one of the first composers to actually be a working musician as opposed to one who was always working for kings and princes and courts. Is that right?
Schubert was probably the first full-time freelance composer that there was. Yes, Beethoven, who was his contemporary, enjoyed some patronage from nobles, but Schubert really didn't have a lot of help. He had to do it all on his own. He was very poor. Mm. He was kind of a migrant living in his friends' houses and his parents' house, and rarely did he have his own place. He was a true bohemian character who somehow, in the only 18 years that he wrote music, he died at 31, managed to turn out over 1,000 pieces of music. And how he did that, given the challenges that he had in his short life, is beyond belief.
Did he burn out?
He didn't burn out. He died from syphilis.
Oh, dear.
And at least that's what all medical fingers point at, given the symptoms. He lived with that for the last 6 years of his life and knew that he was finished, but he had a kind of a race with the Grim Reaper, and as he got closer and closer to the end, he turned out more and more incredible masterpieces. His maturity, his late period, as it were, was forced upon him by mortal circumstances. Should we be glad of that? No way. But we are certainly blessed by those amazing works that came from a time of such challenge, such struggle, but such determination to fulfill his own destiny.
We're talking with the great cellist David Finkel. He and his wife, I want to say musical partner and life partner, Wu Han, pianist she is. Do I have that right?
Very much so, yes.
And they are the founding artistic directors at Music at Menlo, which we're talking about now, the Music at Menlo Chamber Music Festival, taking place. This is the 13th season. It is particular emphasis on the music of Franz Schubert. It begins tomorrow, the 17th of July, goes on till the 8th of August. 50 events on 3 stages in Atherton and Menlo Park. A website to look at for more information is musicatmenlo.org, and a telephone number to call would be 650-331-0202. Besides performances, will there be like workshops?
We have practically every day an open masterclass where the senior artists are working with the younger musicians. We have lectures. We have conversations. There's something there for everybody. And many of the events are open to the public free of charge.
A Schubertiade. Did I say that right again?
Yes, Schubertiade.
Schubertiade. That is the emphasis of Music at Menlo this year. You'll be recording it. It'll be on the radio as well.
Yes, we record almost all of our concerts in very, very high quality, and you'll be hearing some of them.
We're looking forward to it.
Thank you.
I'm very excited about this. Music at Menlo, the 2015 Summer Festival, begins tomorrow, Friday the 17th of July through the 8th of August. As I said, Atherton, Menlo Park, Music at Menlo, all spelled out, musicatmenlo.org for more information. David, so much thank you, too.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Today is the birthday of the great Jamaican singer Desmond Dekker. Desmond Dekker was born on this day in 1941 in St. Andrew Parish in Greater Kingston. He would go to church with his grandmother and learn and watch the singers, and he was obviously inspired by the singers that he became a singer very much his very own. Happy birthday to Desmond Dekker. It is Open Air here on KALW San Francisco. Coming up next, it's the BBC News Hour, recorded an hour earlier for broadcast now on this listener-supported station, KALW San Francisco, KALW.org. The time is 2 o'clock.